Bandwidth for the Weird Things podcast provided by WiredTree. For sites of any size and world-class customer service, head on over to WiredTree.com.
Welcome to Weird Things. I'm Andrew Main, joined by Justin Robert Young.
Well, hello, friends.
And Brian Brushwood.
Howdy, y'all. Is that how Texans / Martians talk?
Pretty much. So, gentlemen, I have an offer for you.
Oh, good. I like offers. I like accepting offers.
Offers are the best. That's a well-known catchphrase of mine.
Also, offers, not the best name for hitmen. I tried to start a club of hitmen called the Offers.
Offers, yeah.
Yeah, no, it didn't work.
No. Well, listen, this offer will be a hit.
So to speak.
Man.
Yeah. All right. I'm with you.
All right. What I suggest is that we send you two out of your little studios, Brian, out of your little egg crate you live in there.
Mm, you mean outdoors, like in the outers.
Yeah, and Justin, whose studio looks more and more like a TGI Fridays every day.
It's good. It's good. Welcome to Andrew riffs on everyone else's studio. Yeah.
Am I all right? Am I right?
Well, you know, listen, we all can't broadcast from the half price books that you had before you decided to put up foam behind you.
Those were pop up books and a very, very special collection of pop up books. I will have.
Oh, my goodness.
You know.
Hot takes. Savage. Yeah.
Let me know how the mozzarella sticks are. Anyhow, so here,
all I'm saying is that podcasters cracking on each other for their backgrounds is like trying to find the tallest person in the little person colony, right? Like, it's a very low bar.
It wasn't a crack as much as just an observation that I just made at that point, that it does look like Brian's in his very precious, special Brian container, you know, and Justin
there,
does look
there. Like, there are people who like get upset, like this most recent episode of The Modern Rogue. Somebody who's just like, I'm just raging at that background, like yeah, somebody like, felt something harsh enough that he needed to type that and have that publicly be attached to his name.
Oh, to have a life so perfect, that's the one little detail that drives you nuts. But anyhow, we're sending you guys out of your studios, away from this. We're going to send you on a little bit of adventure. How would you guys like to go to Europe?
By boat? Maybe. No, plane.
That's what plane.
We're flying you to Europe. Take a little trip. We're going to go to Italy, you know? We're going to go visit Italy, you know, where they all look like Justin.
Italy. Yeah. Well, and not all. Yeah, many Lou. There's a lot of them there.
Yeah, and then we're going to go to Sicily. You guys want to go to Sicily?
Oh, hold on. And that's Justin's home heritage town.
That you know.
As far as you know, yeah.
We're going to go to Sicily where they all look like a Justin and go, hey, how are you doing? And then
I too am a Justin Robert Young. All of us. We are all juries here.
Hey, come join me and my family at our TGI Friday set.
An alligator with the sunglasses. Now you've seen everything, eh?
Now we're going to go see all the natural wonders of whatnot in Sicily and maybe go do a little hiking, maybe a little climbing. And, I mean, we're in Europe, so, I mean, nothing bad ever happened in Europe. So we're all good. It's good. You guys want to go on a little tour? Tour around here?
By the way, that was a amazing eye-opening moment for me was when I did a TV show in Istanbul, Turkey. And in my mind, I was like, oh, it's Eastern Europe. And then I landed and I looked around and I was like, no, this is the beginning of the Middle East. like they don't accept the euro or nothing. It was crazy.
Yeah. We're in
Europe proper. Everything can go right.
So like, let's go for a little bit of a hike, guys. Let's go on a little hike. And there's some snow on the ground and whatnot. Mm-hmm. It's kind of beautiful. It's serene. With little snowball fights back and forth like this.
Sure, yeah. This is great.
I mean, I'm casting side-eyed glances looking for just in case the Pope happens to, you know, be out and about.
It's a little south for the POPE, you know, where my money be, you know, but I'm just saying, you know, normally, Andrew, a lot of these scenarios wind up going wildly sideways. This just seems like a nice little vacay.
Oh, yeah, we have a jaunty tie. I say, hey, shut up, are you? And then I hit you with a snowball.
And I go, ah, ha, 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 that's like what everybody sounds like. And then I throw another snowball.
Wait, we look over and there's a team of BBC, like, journalists and crew.
Oh, hey, BBC, what's up, man? Are you here for the snowball fight?
I hit him with the snowball.
We're here for the scenic views, guys. This is great. We're in Europe. We're in Italy. We're having a great time. There's snow on the ground. We're just going to go hike, take a look up here. You want to come with us, take a look up here?
Sure, let's go up a here. Hey.
And nothing bad ever happens with, you know.
Wait, with the BBC, it's like, what's the worst thing that's going to happen? They're going to capture slow motion footage of my tongue lashing out to capture a bug.
Yeah, and I'm like, this is a beautiful mountain. Like, this is around a beautiful mountain.
It's beautiful. Like,
well, technically,
here we are on the Weird Things podcast, where everything is just great always, and
it's not quite a mountain. It's like, shut up, we're having fun. We're having fun. Just snowball in your face.
Okay, all right.
I do like this new version of the podcast where it's just pleasant scenarios.
It's just idyllic,
having a big, fun, relaxing time.
It's just idyllic vignettes. Is the new name of the show.
Yeah.
We're in a beautiful Mediterranean view on top of a mountain overlooking the ocean. Now, of course, if we are in a mountain in Sicily, I mean, technically, where do those mountains come from?
Wait a minute. Are we at Pompeii?
No, you're not in Pompeii. It's a totally different place.
Okay. All right. I'm just making sure.
Racist.
Just, yeah. Jeez. I mean, we're on Mount Etna. We're on Mount Etna.
Mount Etna, the best.
Yeah, no, they've got great insurance.
Yeah, I mean, insurance, security, right? You feel very stable and secure with Mount Etna, man, right?
I tell you, I feel very, very at home in the natural splendor of my possible homeland.
Yep. Now, there's one little tiny thing about Mount Etna we need to remember. But again, it's not a big deal because we're in, like, Europe. It's not a big deal.
Anyway, I feel so ensconced in the bosom of Lady Sicily that I doesn't matter what. She can do no wrong for me and my boy Bri.
Meanwhile, I've already cut off the bottom half of my shirt and I'm wrapping my wrists like a cage fighter and just sort of limbering up.
You see some guy walking on past you, like, hey, who are you? He goes, I'm a volcanologist.
You.
Does he make mention to the fact that Brian has made a belly shirt because he decided to tear his shirt at the bottom hem?
I grab my belly and I squish it together and I rub it all around so it looks like a – never mind.
It's Europe. He doesn't know. You know, you're American, so it's fine. But you're like, hey, you're on the mountain with a volcanologist and a team from BBC. He's like, hey, guys, come over here. I want to show you something.
Okay, we follow the volcanologist. What does a volcanologist do, bro?
I mean, he's a big fan of Star Trek, for starters, right?
He totally is. That's irrelevant to his expertise and why he's called a volcanologist, though. But he is a big fan of Star Trek.
I make the famous symbol, and I just tell him, nanu, nanu.
He's like, I only get that joke 12 times an hour. Come over here. You go first. Let's take a look. See that steam coming up? You want to see the natural splendor of Mount Etna? You know where Mount Etna come from. You know why?
Some big
plate activity here pushing against each other, forming mountains. No. What formed Mount Etna?
What?
Plates?
No, he just said it's not that. He literally was like seconds away from saying it's not that.
But I heard the word plates, so I'm just assuming. Yeah. I'm going to go with plates. I'm doubling down on plates.
No, it's volcanic activity.
Oh, right.
Volcano. Volcanoologist. Why don't you pronounce it like that?
Yeah. Volcanoologist? So, and you're like, oh, wait. We may be in a weird thing scenario, and we're on a volcano. We're backing up right now. And he's like, guys, like, nothing. It's Mount Etna. Nothing's bad happened in like my entire 30-year career. Let's go take a look over here.
Yeah.
Okay. That feels like... Brian and your now flapping in the breeze belly shirt. What do you think we should do?
How fast can we fashion a hang glider? Like I've got a bit of
approximately 30
left.
Hours longer than it would take for us to walk back.
Okay.
It's snowy. It's like, and it's warmer over here, Brian. You're probably getting cold. Your belly is turning blue. There's some nice steam coming up.
Look, it seems like maybe we don't want to be around for the.
We got the BBC. We got a tour group here. We're fine.
Holy crap. The BBC, are you telling me the BBC got footage of Mount Etna exploding?
Why are you jumping to conclusions, Brian? Have I used the E word? Have I used the E word at all?
Exploding? I'm sorry.
Or if I use the word, the H-E word, huge explosion? No, I have not.
Well,
said anything about a lava flow mixing with steam causing an explosion and pelting people with boiling rocks and steam, I have not said anything about that.
This is strangely specific here.
It seems legit, like... Bri. All right. I go ahead and tug Brian by his belly shirt and say, let's go, man. We're in for a penny, in for a pound. Nothing wrong can happen to us. We live forever.
So we start dancing on the top of
the 78-year-old woman with us here, okay? Nothing bad ever happens to the elderly, okay?
So what did happen?
Bryce, do we have any video of what happened?
Oh, yeah, let's take a look.
So the tour group, the people were in Mount Etna.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
Then all of a sudden, lava flow mixed with steam had caused a huge explosion, pelting people with boiling rocks and steam. The volcanologist said this is the most dangerous incident he had experienced in his 30-year career. A guide had suffered a dislocated shoulder, while a 78-year-old woman had been very close place but managed to get away safely. People ran from the blast, trying to reach the safety of a snowmobile.
Oh, my God. The fact that anybody would think a snowmobile was safety...
Well, getting away from the gigantic exploding volcano seems to be a bit of a priority.
It's you're watching bits of rock flying towards people as they're running away.
Well, and the camera keeps landing in the slush all around. Oh my goodness!
There's a photo of somebody's jacket that got burned, and that's the snowmobile lost a window got shattered. And this is a big snowcat. Not like they straight tried to hide behind a snowmobile and you're imagining like a little one. This is like a big giant vehicle. So here's the shocked people inside of the cab.
Yeah,
of the snowcat
nursing
there.
Head wounds where debris and rock just split their skulls open. This is insane.
Wow, dude, I would just be taking all sorts of pictures if I had gotten my head split open by a volcano and survived.
So many selfies.
Oh, dude.
Hashtag pity me starts trending worldwide.
Ryan, I would take your belly shirt and I'd yoke the arms right off. Like, I'm saying, no, we got to go more. We got to go bigger. Like, I would smear the blood down my face like it was Braveheart. Like, man, that is... I mean, like, how many people can say that they were that close to an exploding volcano? Now, granted, this is not, like, exactly an eruption, right, in the same way that we would see gigantic lava flowing.
I mean,
but, like,
it's,
how many
it's
people
not quite
can
a, I'd say Helens.
People in Pompeii that could have said that.
It's definitely reminiscent of a Mount St. Helens kind of event. Like, I mean, just the explosion of I assume, ash and steam and so on. That's extraordinary.
All right, now let me ask you guys this. So this took people by surprise, right?
Yes.
But let's say that you were able to provide an appropriate layer of protection, right? You had helmets, maybe riot, some other plus one riot cop kind of like outfit. And you knew that this was going to happen at various times during the day. Would you go and view it that close?
Oh my God, yes. If I felt like I was safe, if I felt like I was Iron Man'd up and could handle being there, I don't know that I could physically get close enough. Like are you kidding me? This is a once in a lifetime opportunity. In fact, yeah,
literally,
I'm going to go so far.
Lifetime opportunity.
I'm going to go so far as to say, like, the guy who got his head split open, if you asked him now, he would say totally worth it.
I don't know, man. He did not look pleased when they were leaving. He was.
I don't know. He's putting on a show for his wife. I'm like, oh,
the blood. He's got a ketchup pack.
Wait a minute, what kind of show? What kind of show is like? Oh, I'm hurt. Oh dear me, a spicy meatball. That one was wife.
Replace all of the background characters with dudes in his fraternity. Tell me he would be like, that was amazing, bro. Like, with complete with the blood going down the face.
I mean, yeah. Like,
YOLO.
I think that there are certain temperaments, and I don't know if all of them lead to the what I think we would both be if we were together and one of us got our head split from a falling rock, from an exploding volcano, we would think that it was the coolest thing that has ever happened to either of us, right?
Yeah.
I don't think that guy thinks it's the cool. I think that he thought he was on a nice little sightseeing thing, and then he almost got killed, and now he is very happy to be outside of the final jaws of death.
Maybe.
All right. So, that was a little bit of a tricky thing on my part. And I say, let's just go back to Texas where it's safe. Okay.
Yeah.
Sure. Yeah.
Go back to Texas safe.
Texas. Yeah, when everybody thinks of Texas, they think of safe.
Yeah. So exactly. I was thinking, you know, maybe we join a civic club. We could join a civic organization or whatever.
Lions, let's go to the town of Fraternal Order of Police. Yeah, sure.
You ever been to Sweetwater?
Sweetwater, Texas, sure.
The Shriners.
Okay, so we could join the Sweetwater JCs. Want to join the Sweetwater JCs?
Yeah, of course. Of course. Wait, they get together every Wednesday and Thursday night, and they have a dollar shot night with bingo.
Yeah. I mean, they get together, they do events. They're very, very civic minded group. Very, very into the community.
Hold on. So, time out. Where in Texas is this?
Sweetwater, Brian. I think just delicious Sweetwater. Sweetwater.
Where is Sweetwater? Let me take a look. Is it near?
I think it's
not allowed to look that up, Brian. Brian. This is theater of the mind here. Okay.
It's fine.
It's in Texas. It's called Sweetwater. We're going to join the Sweetwater JCs, okay?
Okay. That sounds delightful.
All right. And they're world-renowned, by the way, too. They are very, very civically active-minded and all that.
Gotcha. For the record, halfway between Dallas and Odessa
wow. West Texas. Huh.
All right. So we're at the meeting. We're like, hey. New guys, Brian and Justin.
Hi, we just relocated. Justin's he's from California. Watch out for this one, am I right, boys? But I've relocated my family. We're really excited
from
to be part
Boston,
of this.
Which is worse than Berkeley to them, but that's okay. So, like, what's with that big oversized bandage on your head?
On my head?
Yeah.
Oh, we were vacationing in Italy. There
together.
Was this incident.
And then I wink slowly.
Just to note, we understand you're from Austin and all, but the midriff shirt, maybe not Sweetwater.
Yeah, I probably should have changed shirts. Yeah. I mean, that's on me. But
anyhow, so we all know we got our big event Saturday. Since you guys are the new guys, we thought maybe you want to lead. You want to be leading on this, you know?
Yeah.
We'll take the lead. You're going to take the lead?
Yeah. No, we'll lead. Yeah. Where are we leading again?
Sweetwater.
Yes. No. Okay.
The event. Just. I mean. Listen. But Brian, if I may. My buddy here has got a bit of a wardrobe issue, as you can pick up with his belly button winking at you in the breeze here. We just need to know what kind of event we're going to be taking the lead on, just so we're appropriately, you know, coiffed.
The roundup, gentlemen.
Oh, the roundup. I hit Justin on the side of the shoulder. The roundup, right?
So I need my dancing shoes, huh?
Dude, sounds perfect. Sounds perfect.
I'm gonna put on these combat boots. So
yeah, I don't know. Yeah. Should I put on my mudden boots or my shoes? I never know. Come roundup time,
and I suddenly have a shotgun, and I'm like, ready to go, boss.
Whatever makes you happy. I don't know how you do things back in, you know,
Austin. Yeah.
East Berkeley there.
So. Yeah. All right.
Anyhow. So we all, y'all set? All right. Excellent. See you there. Pickup truck will pick you up in the morning.
Okay. So now I'm dressed like Billy Ray Cyrus, and Brian is dressed like a Duck Dynasty brother.
That's right. All that's right. Right. But then I walk over to Justin and I was like, yeah, you want to play some Hearthstone real quick while we're waiting?
So pass within forward. Scenario, we play three games of Hearthstone, and Brian wins two out of the one.
Fast forward, pickup truck picks you up. We're driving to the roundup. There's a case of beer in the back, you know, nice. And everybody's excited. There are kids there too, and all that.
Great.
Which part do you like more, Justin, the J or the C in the JCs? I mean, there's so much to love about them.
Oh, why choose when you can have both like we do? Living the dream, right, boys? And I start high-fiving everybody.
So, you know, your driver's like, hey, so which part do you like better, the fuming or the grasping?
The fuming?
The who now? The what now? Hey, sorry, I got a bit of an ear problem here. What'd
fuming
you
say? Or the grasping?
I think the fuming sounds less.
Oh like wait, we're passing some people holding protest signs like "Stop the roundup! Stop the roundup!" I'm like, oh man,
oh dear,
oh these nudges, huh? I mean, jeez, yeah, you know, I'll tell you, it's really breaking my achy, breaky heart. Remember that one?
I lean over to Justin and I was like, I don't think.
Driver's like, I'm more of a Lord fan, you know, to be honest with you. Green Lights like this really, really just sings to me. But anyhow, we pull up, we're outside of town. There's a group of people there. Maybe there's a portable smoker with some barbecue getting ready to go, you know, get served up, you know. Everybody's very happy. Everybody's smiling. I mean, like their footwear may be kind of like boots and stuff. And boots. And my first impression is that, are they here to help the elderly get items off of top of high shelves? Because a lot of them are holding these sticks with grasping claws on them.
So I lean over and I'm like, hey, listen, between you, me, and the wall, I mean, I know what's going on here, but Justin's a little bit uncomfortable because he's a little bit slow on the uptake. You just want to explain to Justin what we're doing here? Yeah, because
what
Justin,
the roundup is? You know yeah. We're rounding up. Oh, don't you know what rounding up?
I know what a roundup is. I've been doing it since my daddy was knee-high to a turtle.
Well, if you guys have been doing the Weird Things podcast for this long, clearly you know what we're rounding up.
It's got to be snakes. God damn it, Justin, we're rounding up snakes.
Yeah. At that point, I immediately looked down. Oh, Jesus.
Sweet.
Sweetwater JC is organizer of the world's largest rattlesnake roundup.
Rattlesnake roundup? Who's protesting rounding up of rattlesnakes?
By the way, I go ahead and wearing my Billy Ray Cyrus outfit, I start pointing at my snakeskin boots and looking at the snakes in the eyes and saying, who's the boss? Huh? Huh? Who owns this town?
They're definitely so, just
and there are kids and stuff preparing the stuff. Like they're it's like
whoa,
they're like,
oh geez, they're killing these snakes, man. Oh man, there's blood on these kids' hands.
I mean,
we missed it in the video, but there's a handprint wall where the kids go and leave their bloody handprint.
Oh, I mean, here's the weird part. Like, they're not wrong. Rattlesnakes are dangerous business. Like, dealing with the rattlesnake handler was one of the most fascinating things.
Jesus, this is like,
oh my God, he's kicking a pile of
these big piles.
He's kicking a pile.
And I thought it was just a tagline.
Look, little
but...
girl, look at this little girl wrapping, getting her the blood on her hands. Oh my God!
Ah, she put the little handprint, and now she's smiling, and they're dumping all these snakes. Guys, I think the prophecy is true. City folks just don't get it.
Oh.
It's horrifying.
Plumbersonly.com had it right. I rarely have no words on this podcast. I wish you could see the mountain of rattlesnakes.
When does this happen?
I kind of think we need to be there for the next one.
I kind of think that we need to do a live episode of Weird Things at the next
roundup. Yes, yes.
So this report is 3 days old from DallasNews.com. I think they do this every year.
Second weekend in March.
All right.
That literally just means that I need to stay for South by.
Yeah, we cancel South by Southwest, and then we just go and be there for the roundup. That's so many. They have so many.
All right, the question was, are these caught in the wild? Yes, these are caught in the wild. This is how they try to reduce the rattlesnake population.
Last week, 6,000 pounds of rattlesnakes were rounded up.
6,000 pounds? Like each rattlesnake is a pound. That's 6,000 snakes. Picture 6,000 snakes.
No, some of these snakes are like 6 pounds, Brian. Some of these are big snakes. So
yeah.
It's a mere thousand rattles. Squeezing the blood into the little girl's hand and her going, if you showed me this was like in India or China, I'd be like, oh, well, you know, that's just how they are in those countries.
Here's a great paragraph. The ever-present buzz of rattles sound almost mechanical, like a bad generator worrying to keep the festival lights on. The smell of the snakes, a pungent mix of earthy rodent feces scents and vinegary pheromones, wafts around the arena. Occasionally, a JC will spray the snake pit with a full can of Right Guard deodorant, but then it just smells like a pile of snakes covered in a layer of Right Guard.
Jesus, beat reporter, keep the Dickens in the pit.
Oh, gosh. Well, if you'd like to make it possible for us to go to things like, I don't know, visit the world's largest rattlesnake roundup, where it's going to be literally three guys going, their hands in the air going,
Here's what you got to do. Go to patreon.com/weirdthings. Again, patreon.com/weirdthings is where you can support this very, very show. Thank you guys so much for being a part of it. It is really, really amazing that you guys continue to support this fine program that happens every Monday live on twitch.tv/nightattack.
11 patrons away from YOLO 420.
I think it's time we do a new video for that Patreon, by the way.
No. Let it age.
We want to get more patrons, maybe we do a new video.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe.
That old marketing adage. Just keep at it.
The old stuff is fine. That's the way marketing works. Oh my God. I am going to be haunted by that. And here's the weird part is like I have like they're clearly killing the rattlesnakes and splitting them open, I assume, to make food out of them. I want to go eat rattlesnake. I want that very badly.
Right. You live in Texas.
Rattlesnake wants to eat you.
Yeah. I'm certain. It's a mutual admiration we have for each other.
By the way, four hour drive through the heart of Texas to get from Austin to Sweetwater.
Dude, we all pile into the weird van. We drive. We do an episode on the way out. We eat some deep fried rattlesnake.
And also, by the way, I think that like Austin might be the closest place to fly into if you're trying to get to Sweetwater.
Gentlemen, we have an email here, and it was a suggestion for a show topic, and I want to sort of address my thoughts on this. So, Paul writes, says, "Hello, gents. I would just listen to an episode of Serious Inquiries Only titled, 'Is it morally acceptable to have children?' It was a pretty engaging discussion on philosophy, bioethics, and the future of humanity, and it might make for a good episode of Weird Things. The philosopher bioethicist in question, Travis Ryder, made it sound like he was up for interviews." So Ryder is a research scholar at Berman Institute of Bioethics, John Hopkins University. He's one of these people whose opinion is because of the threat of climate change, we should stop having children.
Well, and if you accept some of the precepts, including the fact that each person does add, you know, however many pounds of CO2 to the atmosphere, and that will accelerate climate change and damage the planet even harder. Under that paradigm, he's not wrong, right?
I guess if we're saying if that's our only data set, and also like, and I guess we've had suggestions before of like, hey, you should have this person or whatever. And the problem we've had, it's like, we might be coming into whenever you into an argument where you have a different, let's say, understanding of facts, perhaps, is that you're going to get into just a you're right, I'm wrong, or you're wrong, I'm right, whatever kind of thing. And then it gets so like in this situation is it's a premise I've heard before, you know, again, and it's a premise that accepts the assume makes several assumptions. One is that the worst case scenario in climate change, you know, for temperature rise is a very likely to happen, even though the IPCC reports is now down. It says, no, it's not as extreme as we think it's going to happen. And the extreme problems are going to happen much towards the end of the century. That's the consensus. That is the scientific consensus. That's not the denialist or the lukewarm or whatever. That's what the IPCC report sort of says. Like, yes, there's going to be warming or increased warming, but the most likely cases at the end of the century, right?
Well, so this is really, as I understand it, just a rehash of the Malthusian view versus
Let me give you his points just sure, and then we'll sure. let because I'll let you knock them down one by one or address them. Or change your mind. So his thing is like, well, if we have this 4% or 2.5%, if we have this the several percentage increase, you know, it gets, you know, boiling oceans, that kind of thing. He then talks about, you know, says, well, you know, he says, well, people talk about like, do we want to have a declining population, pointing to Japan and stuff. He says, well, we have finite resources, so we got to learn how to adapt to that, and we need to have a smaller population for that. So that's his point is like, Even if you're worried about like the idea of people being able to improve the quality of stuff, we have finite resources and we're going to run out of stuff. And if we have too many people, that'll be that. Okay, go.
So back in the 1960s.
Denier!
back in the 1960s. Who's the guy that wrote The Population Bomb?
Paul Ehrlich.
Paul Ehrlich wrote a book, The Population Bomb. He was one of the most popular guests on The Tonight Show. He was like a superstar of essentially, I guess everyone had a fever for watching somebody talk about doom and gloom. But then Julian Simon, an economist, said, hey, yes, if you have one fox and 99 chickens, that is a sustainable outcome. But and if you have 10 foxes, suddenly you have no chickens. But that's not the way that works with humans. If you have one human and 99 chickens, that's fine. If you get 10 humans, suddenly you have 1,000 chickens. And basically, he proposed the idea that human intellect, ingenuity, and the ability to shift what we want to consume is an asset. And he suggested that basically of all the resources, there's none more valuable than human ingenuity. And this seems to me to be like another version of this same argument, right?
Yeah, I would say that first part is that the argument is that the threat of potential human loss of life from climate change is such that the solution is to slow down the rate of population growth. I would say that would accurately reflect that point of view, and I would counter that. That's not what the science says right now. That's not what the science says. There are scenarios where you can say in one scenario, like if we have this many degrees of temperature rising, we have a problem. Yes, if we have 100 degree temperature rising, we're all doomed, you know? Well, maybe. Yeah. But, you know, but it's like, yes, what is the likelihood of that doing? And you're making that bet. You're making that bet like, well, if it gets this worse, where other people are like, well, no, the data says, yes, there could be a couple degree more increase. We've been able to weather that before. If we can adapt to that, we're a technological civilization that can readily adapt to that, and that we're fast approaching things solar, and we're moving rapidly towards development of solar, things like this, and our ability to be able to handle that. I would argue, and to your point too, is that, you know, our ability to use, you know, resources has increased dramatically. We use fewer farmland to feed people today per, you know, as a percentage than we have before. We're getting more efficient in certain resources. Certainly as other countries, as, you know, as we get Asia and Africa starts to, their economies grows, yes, they do start to use more oil. They do start to use more of these, you know, fuels and stuff, because they want to have energy to be able to do things like have lights on at night and stuff like that. And I'm not against stopping them from doing that and saying, well, we had our growth, guys. You don't get it. That's going to, trying to prevent their growth is going to put more of them into poverty, more of them into a miserable lifespan than letting them have a growth and trying to invent new technologies that make life better. I think it's almost I cannot tell you how much I hate the point of view of like we should stop having fewer children, because it's this belief that we're in this death spiral and it's a death cult kind of mentality to me. In fact, so much so it's actually a topic in my book Blackfall, available tomorrow from HarperCollins.
Hey!
Smooth.
It raises my hackles because clearly we look at the data. Our food production ability is increasing. We've been handling rising sea levels for thousands of years. There were farms and land in Great Britain that the Romans had that occupied that are below sea level now. They handled it. We can deal with these things. You know, if you ask insurers, like, you know, they talked to Warren Buffett, like, how much does climate change affect the insurance industry? It's like, not. It hasn't had a dramatic effect on the insurance industry. It's one of these things that we can adjust. And yeah, sea levels will rise. The debate over how much they're accelerating is one of these things that's beyond my ability to understand. But, you know, we've been dealing with this situation for thousands of years and can handle this. My fear, my biggest fear, is that we do become like Scandinavia or Japan or Russia or whatever, and we don't keep reproducing and we just become a society of old people. That is a more frightening situation to me. That is a scary situation to me. A bunch of geriatrics that can't, nobody to take care of them.
It also kind of, to me, belays this larger idea of a self-centered nature that, like, for as long as humanity has been able to ponder its fate, we have thought we were closer to the end of it than the beginning, right?
Yep.
Like, and that's just such a weird thing because it's kind of constantly been proven wrong. Like, all available evidence seems to say that we are continuing to explode and change, and now we are on the precipice, realistically, of like possibly becoming a multi-planet species in our lifetime. And it's like, so why would any of these ideas that we're like, you know, well, we're on slice 8 of our 10 slice pizza, and once we're at 10, we all die. Like right. Why would that hold as much currency as it maybe did back when it seemed more realistic? Like, now we're in the time of unlimited optimism, it would seem.
I would make the contrary argument would be like, 7 billion people on the planet, our ability to influence and make things go negative has never been greater than ever has been. It's absolutely true. You know, if we continue to keep pumping out CO2 continuously and accelerate the rate at which we do that, I do believe that we will have problems that, you know, real, you know, discernible problems are going to come from that. I believe that. But I'm also a person that says that, you know, looking at these different scenarios, what's the most frightening scenario to me? One is if we retract our economy, you know, we stop our economy. The thing that's been driving solar panels and renewable technology is technology. The reason that, you know, you're going to have, you know, Tesla plans to put 500,000 electric cars on roads over the next year, and GM is doing the Bolt and this sort of stuff, has become the drive of our economy towards better batteries. You know, solar panels are driven by technology. If you say, hey, let's slow that economy down, and you can, the thing, if you look at Moore's law, the thing that slows it down, the things where you get your peaks and your valleys, the valleys come from slowdowns in the economy and slowdowns in technology in these areas. So to me, it's like, no, the recipe for death is like, hey, everybody, let's just stop having young children and engineers and scientists to solve these problems and just move to our little retirement enclaves.
Well, and that that's one of those things where it's like it's a bit of a what's the argument, reducto ad absurdum, where it's right. Like, you know, you take something to the extreme. So it's ridiculous. Like, if it's right for us to be The Economist, Chicago School of Economics,
Milton Friedman.
Yes, Milton Friedman. This is apocryphal, but the story is that, you know, he's there watching people build a canal, and they're all using shovels, and he's like, why aren't you using, you know, real equipment? And it's like, oh, you don't understand. This is a jobs program. He's like, well, if it's a job program, why do they have shovels? Why don't you just give them all spoons, right?
Spoons, yep.
And so likewise, if it's right for us to have fewer people, why not just have no people at all?
Yep.
That seems like that would be the best for the planet. Yeah.
Yeah. No, it's like it gets the minimum wage. Why not make it $100 an hour? You know, it's that and if you say, well, I'm like, okay, so we agree there's a limit. we have to agree that to limit to how, you know, that where that solution is no longer reasonable. Where is that? And we think it's more like, no, we think it's you're addressing the wrong problem.
Let me ask, and this is a general thing that I kind of keep coming back to, and I'm not saying this with any authority, but I'm curious to get feedback on this. When has conservation and not innovation been the solution to the problem? Because conservation always seems to me to be this kind of weird stopgap where we identify a problem, but it's always a Band-Aid. It's not a permanent solution. Like, when have we ever conserved our way out of something instead of innovating a new way to do it?
It depends upon how you manage a resource. And the problem you get into is you take oceans, and we have oceans that are overfished because they don't belong to anybody. And as many boats and, you know, low paid fishermen you can put out there to go grab, you can go into areas and you can get a lot of fish. And we have, you know, we have depleted areas there, and conservation and management, because there's only a certain amount of ability for it to replenish itself. And because if I'm a fisherman, my cost is nothing, you know, to just send my boat elsewhere. You know, I will deplete this area until I can, and then I'll move somewhere else. And that's an area where conservation makes a good idea. Okay. There are a lot of things. There's a lot of resources that take a while to replenish themselves and do that.
Am I right in remembering this? I was talking to Bonnie about this the other day. Conservation has gotten us to a place where I believe the humpback whale is like about to leave any kind of endangered status. Like for the first time, scientists are able to study how they move in giant pods. Yeah.
And now it's an example of like where our ability to whale and our technology increased so much. So we did serious damage to those populations, and, you know, we probably wiped other species of them off the planet, because as we developed better harpoons, faster boats and ships like that, you know, there was finite population. We could do that. And so I don't think any of us here believes is the idea like, oh, we can't do any damage. Oh, it's not like, no, we can, we know we can do these things, but it's just, we have pretty good systems and ways to understand how we're doing that. And markets and things like that are a wonderful way to sort of address that. It's like, you talk about like, you know, tigers, you know, the tigers are endangered and stuff. It's like, well, you know, there are tiger farms where they raise tigers for food and for, you know, skin. They've had those, and like the tigers can thrive there. But that just raises people's, no, you can't do that to these precious little creatures. You know, it's like, it's just a big cat, you know. And I would just say to Ryder points out, because he does a thing like, he talks about people addressing some comments, those claiming climate change is a hoax devised by those who wish to control the world's resources are not worth responding to. Well, I mean, that's, you know, a way to conflate a lot of points of view there. He says, since 97% of all relevant experts cannot convince climate change skeptics of the basic scientific facts, then nothing I say will change their minds, which is the problem there is that, yes, there is this 97% thing, which is a very, very – and I have no problem believing that majority of, you know, scientists within the field feel that way, that climate change is you know – the wording is man-made or primarily man-made or whatever like that. And it's not a hypothesis that I have a problem with. There is a thing, though, that where they say relevant scientists means that particular paper that people cite, you know, the 97%, it was a very weird selection sort of thing of papers that talked about climate change, blah, blah, blah. 97% agreed that it was real and man-made, you know, that it was primarily caused by man, you know, which then fine. That's one thing. It doesn't address what percentage, you know, it doesn't have anything to do with future forward predictions. All of our models, most of our models, rather, for predicting future climate change have been wrong. They've always been over hot. They've been way, way hot compared to what's happened. So we know that our future casting is way off. Not to say that it's evidence of any sinister conspiracy or whatever like that, but our prediction models have sucked. Economists are terrible at predicting and trying to say, well, let's reduce the human population for a problem that we are not experiencing right now. And, you know, here we are 2017, 20 years on from when this debate really started getting to grow. And we're still having the debate because, well, the effects that we're supposed to be seeing, we haven't seen. And some people are like, well, just wait. And it's like,
I'll tell you what, I think from the Weird Things podcast to your home, keep banging. No reason to pull up on that one. Go ahead.
I would say, if you truly believe that we are destined to only live as a species on Earth, then I can understand the moral case for not having kids. But if you believe, like I do, that we're a virus and our job is to infect the universe, then the idea of reducing our number one resource, aka a more intelligent life, is insane. Like we got to get off this rock. We got to, like, we have to go from one petri dish to two petri dishes, and then after that we can have a discussion about exactly how much of the universe we want to infect. But for right now, it's like we got to get off this rock.
Yeah, and I think we're all for the idea of, like, and managing how our efficiency of things and minimizing things like putting, you know, CO2. Yeah, absolutely, is a greenhouse gas. Absolutely. And there is, you know, and there, of course, there is a limited amount of infrared absorption you're going to get. So it's like after a certain point, doesn't really matter. Keep putting up there. Who cares? And we've had much higher levels historically, whatever. Yeah, I'm like, oh, I'm all for these. I'm all for, like, conservation, all these things. I'm all for this sort of stuff. I just hate these sort of, like, therefore, you know. Have no children, you know, stop innovating and don't go to other planets.
Well, maybe we can move away from a ridiculous fantasy scenario and move on to the hard science of Journey Quest. Can we do a little bit of Journey Quest?
Oh, Journey Quest. Journey Quest. Okay. So somebody sent us a really awesome, like, recap thing, and I think I forgot to forward that on to Bryce. I assume that Bryce got it, but then I realized that
Super Pro. That's 411 of you guys making it possible for us to stay loud, live, and independent. Appreciate it.
You guys stall for me here.
No, that's
hey,
fine.
Hey, man, Journey Quest is where Brian and I go on an amazing adventure. We have been through post-apocalyptic.
Boring.
I love the fact that Andrew is casually searching through his Gmail while offhandedly criticizing Justin's ability to fill in.
Which was ordered not but seconds ago.
So this was Stephen Crane sent us this, and I've sent it forwarded on to Bryce. And it's like a very, very cool, very, very good job.
We should pick some theme music for Journey Quest.
Previously on
Journey Quest.
Wow, these are definitely not laundry bags full of laundry. They're definitely more of our demon seed.
Oh, you're here to discuss terms of surrender. Okay,
All of the kingdoms are going to come unite and sack this castle. So either you let us go and we defend you, or you're all dead. How about that?
Oh my God, that's great.
That was great. Thank you, Stephen. That was awesome.
God,
so last we were, Brian and Justin have traveled to a very faraway land with people who are in the middle of a sort of a medieval style warfare. And Brian and Justin first tried to have Brian pose as the Duke, the reigning Duke there, and what could have been a wonderful, you know, cunning sort of ploy that could have led to them living a life of leisure and fun and whatnot and decadence. Somehow they screwed that up, tried to escape several times, even though they really didn't need to, and then found themselves in the middle of a battle, which they were on the verge of winning because of their superior knowledge of Demon Seed. And then in the midst of the battle, Brian decided that they were going to cave and surrender to the enemy. Was that the case?
Or no, you ran back.
It's accurate.
Back to your own people.
Yeah.
And admitted that you'd betrayed them.
Yeah. And also that we were only impersonating their now dead leader.
You may have been implicit in the murder of their duke. Yeah. And you thought that your wonderful, you know, argument of tactics and rhetoric were going to save the day.
Yes. But the fact is, look.
And the demon seed.
Ain't no benefit in looking backwards. Let's look
also,
forward.
Also, by the way, we tried all those things in that sequential order. So we surrendered and then came back, went back on our surrender and tried to seize legitimate control in a coup d'etat. From the Duke who had died and we were impersonating.
Yeah.
And if my Wirecast scenes are correct, did you guys end up on the guillotine?
No.
Yeah,
no.
That was where we were last. Well, we last.
We
found
didn't have the
hero.
Guillotine because I don't think they had the guillotine technology here. You were just on a chopping block.
Oh, also, I shout to the crowd. Also, we know how to make guillotines. That's another good
that's
thing about
the
us.
Places for them to kill you.
Yeah, Brian, it's not really helping you.
I mean,
So you've got bags over your heads. You're down on the stone blocks, and you can kind of hear each other's breathing next to each other. It's yeah. Adorable that you guys know how each other breathes.
Hmm.
Any last words? For each other?
By the way, I declare King's Gambit.
Wait,
I say shut up. Just fucking go with it.
Oh,
and
oh
you
my
were
gosh.
Smacked in the back of the head for swearing, you know? That's going to be a 50 copper piece fine.
I think to myself quietly that this must be a good bit if it's worth cursing on this curse-free podcast.
That's what King's Gambit means, that you're allowed to curse.
So an orator goes up and you hear some guy just listing a list of grievances, you know, insulting to his dukeness, the highness, and the tattest, and blah, blah, blah. And he's just like droning it out. You're like, just kill us already. Somebody comes up and whispers behind you like, hey, I'm the Axeman's helper and I'm fans. You know, I thought that we really needed a change of administration here. I was all for this. You know, it wasn't a very popular view. You know how those elites are. And I was thinking that people didn't understand what it's like for the rest of us in this kingdom and this dukedom. And I'd like your bold ideas. Granted, you had no experience in politics. That was very, very clear. But we really liked, you know, your fresh approach to it. You were going to make this dukedom great again, and we love that.
I shout,
hey, listen, 776 will rise again.
I shout, I do invoke King's Gambit, and then I say the C word.
Yeah, that doesn't mean anything here, guys.
Oh, sorry.
Listen, here's the thing. There's going to be an eclipse in about 45 seconds.
All right. Nice.
So what I need you to do is to follow my lead. You got it?
All right.
Yes. Yeah. All right. We're following. You lead. Okay. We follow. Right.
King's Gambit. I say the
guys
S-word.
Up on stage, like, and then furthermore, and they entered the ducal chambers of Privatite Ground, and then they ate the Duke's food, both brought from faraway lands, and then they performed a sketch, which we suggest was actually stolen.
Then you hear this oohing and awing over the audience. And they're like, and you notice like through the thin gauzy look of your things over your head, it gets dark. And the guy's like, all right, now here's what you do. Follow me. Pulls you guys off of the blocks.
Nice.
Whips the masks off. You jump down off of the chopping block. And you see right behind there is like a small little like kind of like a sewer grate hole. He says, follow me. We're climbing inside of there, right? You're following him.
Following. Got you.
Scurrying around. It smells like you're clawing through like raw sewage, by the way, right now. Like raw sewage. It's disgusting. It's gross. It's all right. Now we've got to swim through this sewage part here. Are you with me?
Swimming through the sewage.
I'm not swimming. I'm wading slowly, and I'm still laughing.
It's a pipe, Brian. You cannot wade. You've got to like just swim through it.
You're going. Fine, you're going. You're going.
I swim.
Okay. You climb up over the top of it, and now you're inside like this little prison chamber. It's like, don't worry. This door's open. We're gonna go through this cell here. We go through this cell here. We go through this other cell, and there's another hole in the ground. Like, come on, back through here. And it's a toilet. You climb back down through there, climbing through the toilet. Okay, now we've got to go through the rat tunnel.
Are there any
rats?
Are there any rats in the rat
tunnel? You better watch out, or I'm going to declare King's Gambit on you, bruv.
There are no rats in the tunnel, okay?
Declare
so we climb into the tunnel because the snakes got them all.
Okay, gotcha.
There's some cotton mouse snakes around there. Like you're getting bit on the legs a couple bit, but we go through there and you keep going through the tunnel, right? Now you notice this guy's like clad all in leather and he's not bothered by this. Like, okay. We come to another opening, right? We're inside of another opening. Okay. You with me on this?
Right there.
Okay. Now we have a little bit of a cockroach infestation problem in this chamber.
It's fine. I eat a cockroach.
Oh, good, because they're already climbing all of your mouths.
Good. 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 I chew it down and I stare right in Justin's eyes. And I was just like, why you a baby?
Okay, nah. Now we got to go climb through this tunnel here. Listen, we're almost there, guys. We're almost there. This is the latrine. This is the soldier's latrine. And we actually got to climb through the latrine.
Okay. Is there any poop in the latrine?
No, just urine.
Great.
And there's about 20. They're like about 20 soldiers.
I splash around and I look at Justin right in the eyes and I say, urine's
you gotta
sterile.
Crawl. Brian, you got to crawl because they're standing over it using it right now.
Okay.
Get down. Okay. So you're crawling through the routine as they're disgusting.
I splash some water up just to give them a little surprise.
You start a fight. Next thing you know, there's a big latrine fight, which we won't get into. That's just disgusting. So we keep climbing, climbing. Right. But guys, we're almost there. We got to go through this. We got to go past the kitchen. But we're going to actually have to go past like the stove area, like the oven, the area there. It's going to get very hot. Let's climb through there. Okay.
Yep.
All right. And then we finally get to a small little chamber. Like, okay, here's the deal. We got to go through the market. I need you guys to put on I need you to disguise you guys as blind guys. Okay. As blind men. Nice. It's a way for them to cover your eyes. Okay. So put these things over your eyes. You got them?
Yep. Yeah. No, I use my power of closing my eyes to fully seem like I'm blind.
Well, he puts blindfolds over you, so you look like a blind guy trying to cover. This
right,
is the
right, but behind the blindfold, good. I make sure good to keep acting. My eyes closed.
Your method acting is amazing, okay?
Yeah.
All right.
I open my eyes.
I feel my other senses grow in acuity.
Okay, so we're crawling. You're crawling. He's guiding. He's pushing like, okay, you go over here. Now just, we're on a stone bench, okay? Just hold on. I hear some noises. Just stop right there. Just put your head right down here. You guys, you with me?
Yeah.
Gonna wait. All right. Take off. I'll take off the blindfolds now. Oh, we're back on the chopping block, and everybody's laughing at you, and you realize the jester did this to you. Wah, wah.
Oh, man.
All right. I look over at Justin, and I say, is it time for us to revealed that we're secretly robots?
Well, I think it's time for just the biggest King's Gambit of all time.
Okay, I stand up and I announce to everyone. I was like, I look to everyone and I shout out, like, I just want to grab their attention to distract them from Justin. So I start to say, the concept of resistance to fire is what is old as history itself. And I start doing my fire eating routine.
Well, I assume he's tackled
explosive
fairly quickly.
Feces. You're now on fire, Brian.
Okay. I say, I cannot resist fire. And then
All right. You want to know what? Is it still dark? Is the eclipse past?
There was no eclipse. They just like raised a sheet in front of the sun and just faked you out.
Okay. All right. Look. How many people are we looking at in the crowd?
I don't know. 782. Oh, okay. No. That guy went through a little hallway.
All right. 782. And then meanwhile, how many
people?
Mother
brought in her six children.
How many people are on the dais with us?
You've got the executioner. You've got the Duke's. The guy was doing the long talking. You've got the fool who's just grinning, laughing at you wildly right now.
That's fine. Are we physically restrained at this point?
Yeah, and your hands are back and tied, and you're secured, and there's a group of soldiers all around you here.
I look to Justin.
I try to rub my head on it just has caked in poop and urine. Like, I just try to rub it on as many people as possible.
Yeah, you're by yourself on the block, and there's the executioners. Like,
well, they had to secure me. I just wanted to get real octopus.
Okay, mission accomplished. Now I'm. You know, do you have any last words to each other first? This is just me talking.
I mean, Justin, look. It seems like we're kind of screwed. It feels like this is the end of our story, and I'm sorry that we time traveled. I'm sorry that I gave us up. I'm sorry that we never made it to the West Coast and never found your wife or
never
Andrew
found out if Andrew was alive.
Yeah,
right?
We never. There's a lot of unresolved issues, and they're all my fault.
Bryce is still an evil warlord.
Yeah, no, he's still running Diamond Town. Listen, I say, look, here, I feel real bad about the whole thing. I'm going to commit suicide in an attempt to divert everyone so that you can on without me.
How about we go out together singing an old hymn that we all know, and then I begin singing Semisonic's Closing Time, hoping that Brian follows along.
I do recognize the song, and then I interrupt him to say, hey, did you know that Semisonic's Closing Time is actually about the birth of his son? He's talking about his son leaving his wife's womb. That's what that song's really about. Did you know that?
I didn't, but I keep singing the song, and so now we're both singing "Closing Time" as loud as we can as we face the gallows.
All right, so I put my head down, and with my arms bound behind my back, I run full steam, just leaping into the crowd, hoping either to hurt and injure someone and cause a distraction that can let Justin escape, or failing that, just to run through the crowd.
Before Brian can do that, I grab him to secure him from doing something that will almost certainly get himself killed.
I look him in the eye and say, thank you, brother. And then I kick him and do it anyway.
I kick Brian's leg so he just kind of falls down in a heap and can't do anything.
I get up and say, oh, you, Justin, you sure don't know when to quit, you. And then I try for a third time to run
into... I kick Brian in the nuts and he lays prone on the ground screaming about how his nuts were kicked.
There's now a crowd formed around you cheering on this fight.
I realize that maybe we're onto something, and maybe like we could have a new career as the world's most popular live Punch and Judy show. And so yeah. I kick Justin in the nuts.
I fall down and say, ow, my nuts.
All right. There's some wagering going on now.
I stand up and I say, I turn to an old crone with missing teeth and say, untie me so I can kick his ass.
She punches you. She just punches you in the face.
Okay. All right. I turn.
I say, great old crone. Great job. And I try to high five her.
A large fish, like a big stinky halibut's thrown in the middle of the ring.
I kick the halibut and say, whoever shall untie these hands will get to see a real ass kicking.
Okay. The halibut gets thrown back at you in your face.
Oh, damn it.
Keep the halibut aloft like a hacky sack.
Right? Somebody throws a chair into the ring.
Okay.
Wait, our hands are still bound, right?
Yeah, but you can get your hands in front of you now.
I turn to the audience in an attempt to get them on our side, say, you want to see a real show? You want to see me kick his ass?
They're cheering like crazy now. They are like going ballistic.
I say, man, if only somebody would untie me, I'm going to real give them the king's business.
They're shaking their heads. Like, you don't like, need to untie this. Way they want to watch the fight.
And I grab the fish and I hit Brian right in the face with the fish.
Okay. Audience just roars.
I run over and turn my body around and use my hands to untie Justin.
He's untied now.
Then I look at him significantly and spin around and show him my hands.
I look at his hands and I say, who wants me to untie him?
Thumbs down. Everybody's thumbs down. Their thumbs down. There's a ladder. A ladder just got thrown into the ring.
Now who wants me to declare King's Gambit on his nuts?
Cheers like crazy.
I swing like in full golf proper swing. I take the halibut and I just tee off on Brian's nuts with the fish.
I collapse weeping on the ground with my hands behind me, and I whisper to Justin, tell me this is part of some plan.
And then I stand up on top of Brian's withering form, and I just say, "This is part of a plan."
Huge, huge, huge cheers. Audience starts to cheer. Jerry, Jerry, Jerry.
Then I say, "Hey, all right, let's leave and go get drunk."
I look at him with like squinty eyes and a cocked head. Like,
let's get out of here. We're all friends.
The executioner sets down his blade, goes over to you, Justin, grabs your arm, and holds it aloft into the air.
Hooray for me! Boo, Brian! Yeah.
I am not going to kill you.
Yay!
First.
What?
Second. I will allow you the pleasure of watching me decapitate your friend before I decapitate you.
By the way, I'm quietly trying to squirm away in the background.
Well, kindly, executioner, I would like to thank you for your generosity. However, I do have one request.
Yes, what's that? He leans in closer to listen.
When asked whether or not you would like chicken or fish, remember the halibut! And I swing the halibut right into his nuts. I grab Brian and I try to escape through the crowd.
Executioner goes rolling across the floor, covering his nuts, screaming, "This is not fair." Audience parts for you, Justin. They part for you and they high five you.
Oh my god. You're the best at combat.
I untie Brian and
no,
with the halibut in tow.
Just Brian there and the executioner there, you know, writhing on the ground, grabbing their nuts. You've already parted through the crowd.
Oh, I've left. I couldn't get Brian.
You left.
Wait, so I've been abandoned?
Yes, Brian.
I can't go back. I'm already too far gone.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
And a man approaches you, Justin, says, "You, sir, I have a proposal for you. Come closer."
Sure.
I start eating the halibut, realizing
no,
that
I
it's
have the
likely,
halibut.
Oh,
I've taken the
damn,
halibut with
damn.
Me.
Yeah.
Right. Carrying it stridently over his shoulder like a proud warrior.
Yeah. Wait, what did this guy say?
What's that? He says, next time on Journey Quest.
Ah, jeez.
Ah!
Action-packed episode of Journey Quest.
Dude, that was a hell of a maneuver.
Halibut of a maneuver.
A halibut of a maneuver.
Gentlemen, want to do picks?
Yeah, man. Look, I want to save Legion for after things, but in the meanwhile, I've got a new favorite podcast, and it's not us. I'm sorry. David Rowan is doing a podcast called Minimum, where he listens to all of the self-improvement, motivational, success-oriented podcasts, everything from why can I not remember the name of the guy who did the 4-hour work week?
Tim Ferriss,
to Freakonomics, to just all the big hitters. And then he basically distills them down to 15 minutes, where he explains like the best parts of their story, gives a little bit of his
more push-ups, chicken breast.
Yeah, right.
Save your money.
It's fantastic. It's so good. Like listen to one and I'll bet you a dollar you're going to end up just binging the rest of the series. 15 minutes a pop and they're great.
Oh, that's great.
They're great.
That sounds great.
Nice. My pick will be Get Out. Saw Get Out this weekend, and it's really, really good. You know, we kind of sang the praises of Split a few weeks ago. This is another Blumhouse production, but, done by Jordan Peele. Obviously, a lot has been kind of talked about with this flick, but it's something that even with all that I read about it, I still kind of did not understand exactly what mechanism they were going to use to make their larger point. And I was like pleasantly delighted by the sort of turn that it takes to get there. So well acted, well directed, well written. And you know, there's really not a whole lot that I can say negative about, you know, what is just kind of a rad time at the theater. You know, rarely do things get that smart and that fun. I think that's another element to it. So go ahead and check it out. Get Out.
Sweet. Self-serving pick time. Here it is this Monday, by the time most of you start to listen to this podcast. My book, Blackfall, will hit the shelves. It is releasing tomorrow. Drops March 21st, Blackfall, a Jessica Blackwood novel. It's available in Kindle, paperback, Audible, and audio CD. It should be available in bookstores, too, or Amazon, Barnes & Noble, whatever. Listen, it was called Enthralling by Publishers Weekly, and the previous one was nominated for the Thrill Award. Listen, it's... would mean a lot if you could, you know, if you like the books, if you like books by Andrew Main or things by us, if you just wanted to support us, I guess. And if you haven't read the other ones, you can actually read this and then get into it. It's a standalone story.
Dude,
there's things alluded to in other books, but it makes you can go back and go read those, whatever. So if you want to dip into it, it's a totally cool book to dip into, you know, start from, or you go back with Angel Killer, whatever. But Blackfall is out now. Well, yeah, effectively now. So. That's my pick.
Dude, I will personally vouch for, like, if you're a fan of audiobooks like I am, in the genre of thrillers, it's fantastic. And if you like magic, it's the only mass market fiction that I've seen treats magic accurately. It's fantastic. You're really going to dig it.
Thank you very much. I had a very nice compliment. I think it was in, like, Genie Magazine, whatever, where they talked about, you know, they're several magicians who have written novels, but I was the first one they'd read that felt like a thriller novelist, you know, like a regular, like it wasn't like you made allowances. And I just tried to incorporate magic. And it's theatrical stage magic, and it's a detail of it, but there's a lot of other science and biology and other sort of stuff that goes into that. So anyhow.
When everybody reads it or listens to it, where are we encouraging people to talk about it? Is that like a Goodreads thing, a Twitter thing? Best
thing that can help me is Amazon reviews and Goodreads. If you can give me, if you like it and you enjoy it, if you leave me a review on Amazon, that's great. Goodreads is great. Both of those things are super powerful. I cannot emphasize enough how helpful that is. A nice review, a reason why you love something on Amazon is extremely, extremely useful. So like my publisher's like, hey, we need to get some reviews up. I'm like, well, people can't put reviews because it hasn't been released yet. But I guess on Goodreads it is available right now. So sweet. Did not know that. But anyhow, yeah, that is what helps the most is Goodreads and Amazon reviews. So
right on.
And you can read a sample. You just want to dip into a little bit of sample. On our previous podcast, we actually had part of the audiobook. Read a sample of it. Take a look. Just you get it for free. See if you like it, you know?
Boom. So.
All right, gentlemen. I'm going to bring this episode of Weird Things to a close by saying the magic words. It's been weird.
King's Gambit.
The Diamond Club hopes you have enjoyed this program.